Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways, and for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
So I'd like to welcome Dr. Nadia Bentrop here with us today. Dr. Nadia is a transformational breath worker. She is a doctor and a master of science in pharmaceutical medicine. She's been working for 15 years with hands-on experience in the development of cancer medicines in the pharmaceutical industry. She also works or has worked with thousands of breathers in different countries across the globe for over 13 years. Her key interest is working with cancer patients, and she hopes to bring more information here to people working with cancer patients with transformational breathing. Thank you so much, Dr. Nadia, for being here. And I'm gonna hand it over to you.
Thank you so much, Chad. It's wonderful to get such an introduction. Thank you so much. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak here. And a great big welcome, obviously, to everybody listening in, either right now or later on. Thank you for your interest. I really appreciate it. So the subject I'm about to talk about with you is something that lies very close to my heart. And I've come to understand that I seem to be somewhat of a bridge between regular medicine and alternative medicine. And as you may have heard, I have a lot of experience in actually cancer research and, of course, woohoo, the pharmaceutical industry. Which is sometimes a bit of a swear word over here, but I don't think it is. I really love the thought and the idea of both worlds coming together and connecting and strengthening each other. So this is why I'm so excited that you joined here to listen about what I have to say about breath and cancer. And so just before we start off, I wonder if we could have just in the chat, a little check-in here. Let's just see who of you has either had cancer or has cancer right now, or knows someone who has or has had cancer. Just, you know, either raise your hand or just write in your chat, go yes. I'd just love to hear from you and see how many people actually are acquainted with, yeah, the phenomenon of cancer. And so I'm getting a lot of yeses. Thank you for sharing. I really appreciate that a lot. Yeah, some people very close, I can see. Fathers, mothers. Yeah, I'm just going to give you some more a chance to give some more answers. Thank you so much. And so this is actually really the reality. And this is also one of the reasons why I'm giving this presentation, because I really would love for people to understand how important this is. Cancer happens and occurs an awful lot. And this is why I've started working. Sorry, I'm fiddling about with my computer here, so I'm looking away a little bit. So thank you for joining here again. And my aim here is to tell you a little bit about what research has said about the role of what I would say breath, or actually oxygen and emotions in cancer. And so I wouldn't be a real breath worker if I didn't actually have something to say about the role of oxygen in cancer. I will actually speak to that a little bit, but to be brutally honest, I actually think that the other subject about the role of emotions in cancer is far more interesting. So let me just share my presentation with you. So my plan for this hour is to have a talk for about half an hour, which will be rather theoretical. Bear with me here. And make notes if you want, if you're interested. And after that, I'm going to be leading you in a short breath practice where you will actually be learning a few tricks and tips about how you can help yourself at home with breathing, which also can really set you off. Obviously, if you want more in-depth knowledge, I do offer other things, but that's for later. So I was going to share my screen with you, and let me just check if this screen comes up for you now, and I believe so. Chad, can you give me a nod?
Yes, all good.
Perfect. Excellent. Thank you so much. So I don't need this introduction anymore because Chad did a great job. Thank you so much. And so what my plan was for today is to just speak slightly about some facts about the breath. Obviously, because I'm a breath worker, I think it makes sense to start off with that. After that, I will talk about some facts about cancer. And the little poll we just did already shows us something about how current cancer is in our world today. So this will give us a bit of a scope. Then I will dive into the role of oxygen with cancer, which will be very short. And then after that, I will dive into the role of emotions, which I've been trying to headline it for you, which was actually not so easy because there's a lot of information about that. After that will come breath practice. And of course, obviously after that, there will be some time for you to ask me questions if there's anything that you need to know. So yeah, there we go. So let's just check in about some facts about breath. And some of them are no-brainers, but I thought I would write them down anyway. So the first one is actually this. So we know that we can survive 40 days without food. We can survive for 3 days without drinking, and we can survive for 3 minutes without breath. Now that in itself, I think, is already quite interesting. It says something about the hierarchy of breath in our survival. And so usually when I have an audience that I can see, I'll have people raise hands about, you know, who is actually conscious about their food. And then usually half the group or more will raise their hands. And then I'll ask who's actually conscious about what you drink. So let's say vitalized water or things like that. And then again, some people are also interested in that. And then usually when I ask about their consciousness about their breath, most of the hands actually go down. This says something about the emphasis we give to certain aspects in our daily life. And I think that it's the wrong way around. If you were to ask me, I think we would be far better served if we would just spend some minutes per day with our breath rather than with our food and drink, even though those are obviously also very important. So thank you for joining, listening about the breath, because this is hopefully going to help you a little. A large part of our daily energy is dependent on oxygen. There are some percentages named. I cannot honestly say that I can endorse those. Some people say 80% of our energy is actually dependent on oxygen. I'm not sure about that, but I do know that oxygen is very important for us as mammals. And so breathing by default is really important. So depending on what kind of research you look at, approximately 90% of the westernized population uses only about 30 to 50% of their breath capacity. And I think that's rather shocking because it's not enough, is it? So if you were just using only 30% of your breath capacity, and this includes sports, yeah? So these research actually measured people also when they were sporting. I think there's a lot to be gained with better breath behavior. So let's just check in with how we breathe. So first of all, about 1 in 10 persons experience symptoms of a dysfunctional breath. That's 10% of the whole world population. And then we also know that a dysfunctional breath pattern is related to decreased emotional well-being and decreased adaptability to stress and demands of our environment. So if we learn to breathe in a way that's beneficial to us, we can actually cope with stress a lot better. And some of you may probably already know that. So the question I'm just going to ask you in general is, how often are you conscious of your breath? And I don't need you to answer, but it's just a little check-in for yourself. And so just check in with yourself right now. How are you breathing right now? Are you breathing in your belly or in your chest? What's the rate of your breath? Is it easy or is it fast? Difficult? So just that awareness will already help you become more aware of the role of breath in your life. Thanks for playing with me. So I came up with this quote, so I came into this quote somewhere and I loved it. So I just want to share it with you. And it says that every 24 hours, we inhale at least one molecule of the air, which everyone who ever lived on this earth before us has ever breathed. And so to me, I love that quote because it shows me that everything is connected. our ancestors and us, we are connected through our breath because we are all just breathing the same air. Isn't that wonderful? I think that's wonderful. So anyway, let's head into Cancer. So this is just a little start off about the breath and now the importance of Cancer. So I'm just going to run some numbers by you so you understand what the scope is of Cancer worldwide. So we know now that Cancer is one of the leading causes of mortality and morbidity in the world. And so we know that we have had about 18 million new cases in 2018. These are the most recent numbers that we have from the WHO. And these have raised from about 14 million in 2012. The number of new cases is expected to rise by about 70% over the next few decades. And cancer right now is already the second leading cause of death globally, coming very shortly after cardiovascular disease, so heart disease. Yeah, so there are nearly 1 in 6 deaths due to cancer worldwide. So this actually explains why so many of you actually also entered the answer, yes, I know someone with cancer, because the likeliness is really large that you are either going to have cancer yourself or that you're going to know someone with cancer in your lifetime. This comes really close, doesn't it? So we had about 8.8 million deaths in 2015 globally. And in the Netherlands, this is where I'm from, 1 in 3 persons died of cancer in 2015. 1 in 3. Yeah. So about approximately 70% of cancer deaths occur in low and middle income countries. Very often we tend to think that cancer is a rich man's illness. It's not. It's definitely not. And so what is really important here to understand is that about 1/3 of deaths from cancer are due to the 5 leading behavioral risks. So how you live has a great impact in whether you die of your cancer or not. And this is, I want to bring that home. These are WHO again data. And so a high body mass index, a low fruit and vegetable intake, a lack of physical activity, smoking and alcohol use are all detrimental to your health if you're also battling cancer. And so especially the low fruit and vegetable intake is something that happens and occurs a lot in developing countries, as well as tobacco use and alcohol use. And this accounts for quite a lot of cancer deaths also in the lower income countries. So tobacco use is by far the most important risk factor for cancer. I think you probably know this. This accounts for about 22% of cancer deaths. And this little statistic is going to be really important in what I'm going to tell you later. So I'm just pointing it out to you so you can remember. And then, of course, there's also another issue, and that is an economical impact. And I was hesitating whether I should take this up in the presentation or not. But actually, it's really important because governments need to take really difficult and tough decisions about their funding of the healthcare systems, and the economic impact of cancer is rather significant, as you can see. So it's a big deal. Cancer is a big deal, and it's probably becoming an even bigger deal, and it saddens me a lot, but at the same time I'm so happy that I can share something with you that is actually going to support people getting better. And of course, after next to the bad news, there's always a little bit of good news, and I'm going to take this from the Netherlands. The mortality rate decreased with 1/3 in men in the last 30 years, and that has mostly to do with smoking behavior. And I'm so happy that we can say that men are smoking less and therefore also dying less of cancer, which is good news, I believe. And the same in women, mortality rates also show a slight decrease. Unfortunately, women have started smoking more, which is not so clever. So if you ever have a choice and you can stop smoking, that would really make a big impact in your overall health in any case. And of course, the yearly number of children dying of cancer also decreased. And this is since 2006 in the Netherlands. And I think that could probably go for a lot of developing countries because we just know a lot more about cancer and how it behaves. So that's on the upside. It's not all bad. All right. So as I said, I wouldn't be a breath worker if I didn't say something about cancer and oxygen. So I'm just going to run through this really, really quickly with you because it's a rather complicated piece. But before we do this, I thought I would just engage you in a poll, just keeping you awake a little. So my question here is, and I'm hoping that Anke could, whiz up the poll for me here. It should be on your screen right now. And the question is whether the damage of hypoxia in the tumor is reversible or not. And so what does hypoxia mean? It means a low level of oxygen. So oxia, hypo, low oxygen. So do you believe that if a tumor is damaged, or actually cell is damaged through a lack of oxygen, do you believe that's reversible or not? I'm actually really curious to hear or to see what your answers are. So let's go ahead up, and I see that we have both polls at the same time. I would like to have the first one for now. So just go ahead and answer the first question for me now. So I can see that quite some people are not receiving the poll, but answers are coming in. And I can see that a lot of you are actually have been typing in false, which makes me kind of happy. So there we go. I'm not sure if we have the results of the poll in already.
So we have 23 people who answered within the poll, 26.
Excellent. People. And so what are the answers?
It's 15% for true, 58 for fails, and 27 for I don't know.
Well done on the I don't knows. Thank you so much, because it's not easy to say that. And we won't be rating you. Don't worry. I'm so happy that you're honest in saying that you don't know. So here, this gives me a reason to be able to give you the answer, actually. So thank you very much. So Paul can go now. And I just listed a few pieces of research that I dug up. And to be honest, it was a huge stack of research that I dug up some years ago. And I just listed some of them that I feel are really important. And one of them is actually the first one. In 1931, Otto Warburg already won a Nobel Prize about something to do with cancer metabolism. And interestingly enough, it got shoved away by the development of DNA by Watson and Crick. And with them actually finding the DNA, all this information got lost. Whereas now, actually, in cancer research and development, we're coming back to this notion, because we're starting to find that the only thing that actually links every single type of cancer in the body is a certain type of metabolism, which means that cancers actually succeed in growing when there's not a lot of oxygen around. And so you can, this is just actually quite disconcerting to see that it takes 90 years for such an important piece of information to come back into play again. And so I will not linger here a lot, because I'm with an eye on the time. I really want to make sure that you have your breath exercise as well. But I would like to zoom in on this piece of research from 2016 by Dr. Lambrechts. Whereas actually last year, there was a very interesting Nobel Prize won also in medicine, to everything to do with oxygen in cells. But that is for later. So what did Dr. Lambrechts, or Dr. Tiem Quan, because he was actually the one who really did the research, Dr. Lambrechts is the professor. They did a piece of laboratory research, which I want to share with you. They researched the role of oxygen shortage on growth speed of cancer. And how did they do that? They did that in two ways. First of all, they used cancer cell lines. So these are petri dishes. And they exposed them to oxygen shortage, all sorts of different types of cancer, and some positive controls. And that in itself says that it was a very good piece of research. And then they had a mouse model, which they implanted breast cancer into, where they created hypoxic areas. So areas that had very low oxygen in it. And what they found was this. They found that the cancer cells who were exposed to oxygen shortage, that cancer cells have changed in such a way that the gene which should take care of the death of faulty cells does not activate. So the tumor suppressor gene, for those who know about this, was inactivated in a big, big way. About 50% of all tumor suppressor gene was limited in cancer cells. So this actually shows you that the cancer grows when there is very little oxygen around, contrary to healthy cells. So normally when there's little oxygen around, cells will wither and sometimes will die. Cancer cells are doing the opposite. And what I found really, really interesting about this piece of research is that this effect turned out to be reversible. when they reinstated blood flow and oxygen flow to the tumors in the mouse, they actually showed that the tumors stopped growing. So there is something really interesting happening there, which I think we should follow. Now, of course, there's a bit of a danger. This was a laboratory research. And of course, obviously, a mouse is not a man or a woman. So we do need more research in that. But I think it's definitely hopeful. And it actually provided the missing link for me to link breathwork with cancer. And that actually allowed me to start working with cancer patients almost full time now with my breathwork. So indeed, the result of the poll, or actually the correct answer here, is that the damage of the tumor by hypoxia is indeed reversible. So the answer was false. So well done for you who knew that. And hopefully for those who didn't know that, maybe a little bit wiser right now. So this is actually one of my clients. I promise I would share some of the experiences of my clients. She wishes to remain anonymous, so her name is not Saskia, just to be sure. And she had what we call a triple negative breast cancer, which is pretty much the worst diagnosis that you can get in terms of breast cancer, because these cancers do not react to chemotherapy very well. She went through chemotherapy, she had an operation, and she had 3 weeks of daily radiotherapy where she was breathing every day. I actually had her do that because I know that works. She had no skin rash due to the radiotherapy at all. And for those of you who know about radiotherapy, that is huge, because the skin rash in itself can be rate limiting for the treatment. So that was already huge. It wasn't easy, but she went through it quite well. And at the end of our work together, I usually work with my cancer patients for about 3 months. She said the following. She said, "I feel better now than last year, where I did not know I had cancer. I wouldn't go back to that for 1 minute." I'm just going to allow that to sink in a little. Someone actually having seen that her cancer was a gift for her, which I think is incredible. And I get to witness that by a daily basis. And it makes me so fulfilled as a doctor. Now, thank you for allowing me to share this with you. And this is my other, she's a colleague, and she is a breath worker, and she also had breast cancer. She's free from breast cancer now since 2013. And she says, "It became easier to accept, and I could remain in contact with my body more easily whilst breathing," as she was going through a grueling process with her cancer. She said, "I could keep the helm in my own hands, stay close to myself, and look faithfully into the future. During the tough times when I went through with my cancer," she had to, I'm not going to give you the details now, that's for another time, but she had to go through a lot of very tough decisions there. So I was amazed to see her go through it. She was so light, it was incredible. So that's what breathwork can do. And this brings me to what I would call a missing link in cancer treatment. And these are the emotions. As we look at how cancer is treated, normally people are treated as a body, as a machine, and we're missing something really big here. So this brings me on to my second poll question. And if you still have the poll up, then go ahead and answer the question or write it into the chat. And so I would like you to just check which statement is true for you, whether you feel it is more important to deal with your emotions than whether you had any emotional trauma or big trauma in the past, whether you feel that both trauma and the way you express your feelings or emotions are an important factor in cancer prognosis. Or is your opinion emotions do not have an impact on the prognosis of cancer? I think I gave that one away already a little, but just give it away. I would just love to hear what you think. I'm just going to check the chat here for you too. Let's see what people say. Statement two, both. Keep going.
Yeah, we have 75 for number two.
At the Yay. Moment. That makes me happy. Thank you so much. Yes, indeed. Both past and traumas in the past and the way you express your emotions are really important to your prognosis of cancer. I'm going to show you how this works. First of all, some numbers again. Oh, here's a statement. Sorry. "A problem is never solved on the same level as where it originated." Someone said this to me and I thought it was lovely. So if we have a problem at the body level, then maybe we would be doing well to actually start looking at another level on how to solve it. And to me, I think it's mental and emotional. So let's look at some numbers first. So when we look at what happens to people when they've gone through their treatment, we find that 1/5 of cancer survivors survivors have post-traumatic stress disorder after all clear declarations. So the doctor says you're healed, it's done, nothing the matter with you. And 20% of patients actually have PTSD. That's pretty serious, I think. We know that now, and this is from research upon research upon research, there have been many, many meta-analyses. I almost fell off my chair when I saw how much research there was. And I was wondering why nobody ever teaches us this as doctors. And I realized why. All this information is in the psychology journals, so the doctors never get a chance to see it. So we know now, and this is unequivocal evidence, that stress is definitive for cancer progression in growth, in the level of metastasizing, so spread of cancer, the chance of death, and the duration of survival. So how you deal with stress is really, really important. We know that 1/3 of cancer patients reports having depressive symptoms during diagnosis, which I totally understand, and that 1/4 is eligible for the diagnosis of what we would call major depression. So this is a big deal. About 25% of cancer patients would be given the diagnosis major depression if we would give it it's the attention it needs. And you know what? People aren't treated for that, because the cancer needs to be battled. And I think that's a really big missing link. We're really missing something very big here in general medicine. I have clients who aren't offered any psychological therapy at all, or are given the advice, yeah, just ask us for a psychologist if you think you need it. And I'm thinking, so how do you know when you need it if you're depressed? Tough stuff, this. So we know that emotions have deep effects on the nervous system and the immune system. So I just summarized that huge heap of research that I found for you. And again, if you want to know more about this, keep listening to the end and you'll hear how you can find out more. So breast cancer by far shows the largest association with stress of all cancer types, but many other cancer types also have an association with stress. And this one I love to bits because it really ties it in with my work. Women with breast cancer who found meaning in their experience with cancer had less cancer involvement in the lymph glands. So finding meaning in your experience of having cancer is meaningful on a physical level. Wow. They did research in men with prostate cancer. They checked whether the ones who were optimistic and who could express their anger actually had what we call a better natural killer cell cytotoxicity. Natural killer cells are cells in the immune system. They are like the first guard, and they should label all the cells that are not well, so they can be disposed of. And so men who are optimistic and express their anger well actually doing much better on that front, have a better and more active immune system. And people and men who were up for prostate removal due to cancer, there were two groups. One group was given breath exercises before their surgery and the other not. And it seems that the ones who were breathing before with their diaphragm actually had an improved immune system function after their operation. So people who were depressed, who had liver cancer, had less natural killer cell activity and a shorter survival. Women with ovarian cancer who experienced social isolation had what we would call more angiogenic growth factors in the blood, which is a marker for tumor growth and more cancer growth in animal models. So social isolation is also detrimental to your physical health. And women who reported greater stress after surgery had a diminished cellular immune response. So there is a huge tie to how we feel and how our immune system works. And in tidying up cancer, we really need our immune system. There is a piece of research that I love a lot, so I'm just going to hone in on that one a little bit more. And this research was done quite some time ago, but it doesn't make it more, less meaningful. They actually interviewed the whole group of inhabitants of a Yugoslavian village with a questionnaire, and then checked what people died of and how that correlated to how they worked, how they dealt with their emotions. And they actually have this term called rationality and anti-emotionality score. So if the score is high, it means people are suppressed in their emotions, mostly aggression. So they found that people that are actually not very capable of expressing their emotions had a 29 times larger chance of dying of cancer compared to people who were successful in expressing their emotion. Yes. Usually this is when I hear, wow. So I have to do without, but I'll just imagine the wow here. people had 4.3 times larger chance of dying of ischemic heart disease, 6.5 times larger chance of dying of stroke, and reduced actually what we would call the smoking lung cancer association. So this emotional expressiveness has a larger influence on the occurrence of other cancers and heart disease than smoking. So remember that smoking had an impact of 22% on cancer mortality. Not being able to express your emotions, and especially anger, has a bigger impact than that. All 38 lung cancer deaths occurred in those with high RA scores, so people weren't able to express their emotions. So obviously this was huge. They also found that long-lasting hopelessness was independently associated with cancer. So a whole list of research started after that, people trying to find out whether they could replicate it, and they found out some more, that also anger was associated with heart disease. And so the research extras showed, and again, meta-analysis upon meta-analysis, so really strong evidence, cancer patients had significantly higher scores on the rationality and the emotionality questionnaires than healthy volunteers and students. There is something about cancer patients making it difficult for them to express their emotions. They found that extremely low anger scores have been found in many studies with cancer patients. And they found that it's mostly the suppression of anger that is a role rather than the non-existence of it. So the difficulty in expressing emotions, and again, there it is again, attitude towards helplessness and hopelessness is thought to be an important psychosocial factor in cancer initiation and progression. So in women, they found a direct relationship between suppressed anger and early mortality for all causes, heart disease and cancer. And there's, and here we go, and I find this pretty amazing. There is evidence that suppressed anger can be a precursor for cancer development. And this is the first time that we actually see in research that somebody dares to say something about the origin of cancer. So before, all the research was about the growth and progression and metastasizing, etc. And here are a couple of researchers that actually say, yes, suppressed anger could actually come before coming into existence of cancer. And I think that's a big deal. And it says something about how we work in our society, about how we suppress our emotions, and that is not a good thing. Something happens to your body, you get ill. And so they will definitely say that it's a factor in cancer progression after diagnosis. I think that is unequivocally shown. And then I like this one most. There are actually some studies that indicate that it may be beneficial for patients to mobilize anger to battle their cancer. So yay, since I ever found that, I make work out of it, working with anger with all my cancer patients. And it really frees up a lot of pent up energy, I can tell you that. So my take home message here is that it's definitely worthwhile working on your emotions, and it doesn't really matter whether you are having cancer right now or whether it's been 5 years or 10 years ago, it still improves your progression. So even if you feel like, okay, I've had my cancer, I really, really want to forget about it. And I totally understand that sentiment. A lot of my people I speak to say that. It's like, oh, it's in the past, I want to forget about this. Please don't. Do yourself a favor and really go into working with your emotions, because it is actually going to make you live longer. I don't know if that's enough of motivation, but for me it would be, I think. So anyway, this is my first client, and I was so happy to show her to you. She's actually on a video on my website, but it's in Dutch, so I'm going to have to translate it to you. This is Els, and she had non-Hodgkin lymphoma, which is a rather serious disease, actually. And she came and breathed with me, and she went so well that something very miraculous happened. Normally, she would get 8 courses of cancer chemotherapy, and she was doing so well that her physician actually suggested she only take 6 courses instead of 8. In my whole life as a doctor, I've actually never seen that happen. And she is free of her non-Hodgkin lymphoma since 2017, smiling and happy as she is right here. This picture is taken still with her wig on, and she had had a really busy day, which is a big deal. If you have cancer, you know that that's a big deal. She had been to her physiotherapist and she'd been playing with her grandkids. And she also came and drove for an hour to see me. And after this breath session, I actually took a video of her, and she said, I have so much energy, it's incredible. And then she came out with this sentence. She says, my cancer is a gift. I discovered the deepest thing which helped me back tremendously in life. The stress is gone and I recover swiftly. And she said it and it just felt my jaw drop. It's like, how can you say your cancer is a gift? This is just amazing. So this is what breath can do. Breath can actually bring you into that insight. And this is why I'm so motivated to talk about this and to work with people with cancer, because I know there's a lot more into this than you may think. So this is the end of my presentation, let's say. So let's just summarize what I've discussed with you today. So we know that the number of new cases of cancer is increasing worldwide. We also know that the number of people dying of cancer is decreasing, which is good news. We know that breath influences the autonomous nervous system. We know that breath influences the immune system. And we know that cancer grows faster in conditions with low oxygen levels, other than normal cells. We know also that this phenomenon is reversible by adding oxygen. I've told you about emotions and stress and that they determine cancer growth and progression. We know that now. And that conscious breathing can be a bridge. And so conscious breathing can actually give you a more stable immune system, a more stable nervous system, and it allows you to clear emotions and negative thought patterns, which is really important for your well-being, not just mental, but also physical. So now heading into the breath and the exercise I promised, let's just look at the breath and what it does for you. So first of all, our brains play a really important role here. Our brain monitors namely how we breathe continuously. And so it tells us continuously how we are doing. So if whether there's a threat outside or not. With this information, the body alters hormones and other processes so that we can actually deal with stresses and potential dangers. Now we know that the body only heals when it's in a peaceful state. So when you're stressed, the body cannot heal. And peace only exists when we feel safe. So how can we actually feel safe with everything that's happening around us? And obviously now with Corona and everything, I think that we can relate to the thought of being stressed. And so even that happening, how can we actually make sure that we have this island of peacefulness in our lives, within us? And to me, the fastest way of dealing with that is the breath. The breath, I feel, is the technique that will bring you into peace really, really swiftly. And I wanted to show that to you. So to me, breath is the bridge. Breath is the bridge between the physical, the mental and emotional and the spiritual. Breath actually touches everything. And maybe more levels, I don't know. And so when you're working with your breath, it's continuously moving towards a balanced life. And so I wanted to share with you something that we actually developed together with my colleagues at the scientific committee of the International Breath Foundation, which is a worldwide organization for all the breath workers. And we call it the art of breathing, just to make clear, because there's so many different types of breathing, just to make some clarity in how you can divide them. So first of all, we have the awareness techniques, and these are techniques where you actually don't change anything with your breath. So you just observe. So meditation would be a very good example, or mindfulness or Zen meditation, for instance, where you just observe what's going on. That in itself already creates peace. And the second is the R for art, which is what we call regulating techniques. And regulating techniques basically is a way to breathe to get to a certain goal. So either to create more energy or to create more peace. And so yogic breaths do that a lot. Physiotherapy, heart coherent breathing, or the Wim Hof method, for instance, the Iceman may be known to you. So these are what we would call regulating techniques. And then the third category are what we call transforming techniques. And these techniques actually allow you to dive into your subconscious mind and to clear out what's in there. So this is what I would call process work. And so transformational breath, that's the technique that I know of and work with, is one of them. But you may know rebirthing or holotropic breath, and there are many other different types of breath that do something similar, but most of them are all derived from one of these three types. So I want to hone in on the transforming technique, because to me, the transforming technique is really the bridge between the physical with its effects on the nervous system and the immune system. It even gives you an enhanced detoxification, which creates more vitality, energy, and a better health in itself, already really very helpful when you're having and dealing with cancer, more energy. The second layer it actually addresses is what I said, the subconscious mind, the mental, emotional. So basically that level where all our gunk is stored that we believe and think is doesn't exist, but it actually does. And it actually creates a lot of trouble for us if we don't watch it. So if you start clearing that, you can create a more positive mood, a more balanced life. You're triggered less. And again, here, understanding the message of the illness, finding meaning. When you clear that, it actually allows you to connect more with the spiritual part of you that it was always there, will always be there, and basically you cannot even put a dent in it. And it creates inner peace. If you know that that peace is there, it basically makes everything relative that you're experiencing here in life. And it allows you to be in your power and know who you are. And then with that, actually choices come, what it is that you want, what is correct for you and what is not. And so that latter part is something you need to experience. I can talk about it, but it won't mean much for you until you've experienced it. So what I thought is I made up an exercise where we'll be addressing all these three. I'm just going to go back up here, all these three different techniques. So I was going to start with you with a regulating technique, which is heart coherent breathing. And so what we will be doing in a minute is you'll be breathing, as I say, so 4 counts in and 6 counts out. This will actually allow your nervous system to calm down, for you to come into peace. We will do that for 3 minutes. You can close your eyes when we do that, because I will count for you. Yeah, so then I'm going to make it easy for you. I'm going to put on some music and you just breathe 4 counts in and 6 counts out. I will just go in and out. After that, the music will change a little and I will actually lead you into transformational breath. For 3 minutes, not to worry, it won't give you a lot of process, but it will allow you to experience what transformational breath actually does for you. And then after that, we will have 3 minutes of just total quiet, where the only thing you need to do is just be aware of your breath. Just feel what your breath is doing. You think you can do that? Yeah, so the most and the important thing here, the key here is to breathe from your belly. And that is sometimes more difficult than you think. But really be aware, and what can help is to actually not to sit up too straight. So you can either lie down or just basically scooch down in your chair a bit lazily and put your hands underneath your navel. So in order to put on some music, I'm going to stop sharing my presentation here, and I'm going to put on my headset so that you can hear me speak. Give me a minute. So, all goes well. You can hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. All clear.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And so, why don't you just go ahead and just close your eyes? And I will bring up some music for you now. So, go ahead and then put your hands on your belly underneath your navel. Let's still take a deep breath in and out to start. Good. And why don't you just go ahead and breathe in gently now. And let go. Good. And breathe in again. And let go. And it doesn't have to be big, just make it gentle. And go ahead and breathe in. And let go. Good. And breathe in. And let go. Breathe in. Breathe breathing gently now. And let go. Breathing in. And letting it go. Good. Breathing from the belly. Deep breath in. And out. Good. Breathing in. And out. Doing great. Breathe in. And out. Good. Breathing in. Breathing in and out and breathe in and breathe out. Good. Breathe in and breathe out. Doing great. So now we're going to gently make the transfer to transformational breath. So just keeping your eyes closed, I invite you to open your mouth and then start emphasizing the inhale. It doesn't have to be big, but you're just breathing in for two counts roughly, and then you let it drop as a sigh out. And then you connect your breath. This is a connected breath. So no pauses between the in and the exhale coming from the belly. This is a more active breath. Really relaxing the exhale, letting the exhale fall. Inhale is active. Good. And if you can bring your chest into play, that's fine. Only your belly is fine too. So you know the rate has gone up. Just breathing in and letting go. In, loose. Good. In, loose. Make it circular. I choose breath. I choose life. Very good. Rush it, keep it gentle, but keep it connected. No pauses between the in and the exhale. Excellent. Doing well. Maybe that you become a little bit dizzy. Don't worry about that. Don't get nervous. It's okay. You may feel something in your body, just let it happen. Just observe and continuing to breathe. Allowing life to flow easily and effortlessly, allowing your breath to flow. It's safe to breathe, it's safe to live. Coming from the belly. Excellent. Just a little bit longer. Okay, just half a minute. Allowing life to come in, to breathe in is to receive all the good that is under grace for you now. Okay. And now you can calm down your breath and just let it flow the way it normally does. There's nothing left to do. Just receive all good that is under grace for you now. I call upon the I Am Presence and the higher self of everyone here now. For everybody to receive a clear signal of connection. I'm asking for everybody to receive all good that is here for them now. And just relax, there's nothing left to do. Just relax and just observe. Just observe, nothing left to do. Okay, and so now you can gently start bringing yourself back. Just take a deep breath. Go ahead and open your eyes. Or maybe you want to type in the chat what this did for you and how this was for you to experience.
So Roshni is saying, I feel so awake.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome.
slight dizziness from Julian. Mm-hmm. Ali says, felt a bit dizzy, but more relaxed now.
Excellent.
Bonnie says, hugely calming, energized, with deep peace. Definitely a state change. Calm but alert. Oh my God, tear flowing from all the way, but at peace now. Wow. So many incredible comments.
Allowing yourself to experience this. This is what the breath can do. I really have nothing left to say.
Thank you so much. This was really an incredible practice. Honestly, I felt the dizziness myself and it was very, very powerful for me. And your presentation was amazing and so insightful, and I'm going to share it with people. I actually wanted to ask you a question. If you work remotely with people, or does it have to be in person?
No, in person is better because it allows me to do body work, but due to COVID, we've actually started working online and it's incredibly powerful.
That's amazing.
Yeah, great. So that's an option we have now, which is pretty amazing. Thanks to Corona.
Yes. We have a couple of questions. Maybe we can take one.
Sure.
We have someone asking about non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any data on that.
Anything specific?
That was the question. Perhaps they should contact you in person and have a more in-depth.
It's better just to email me so we can work it out together. Yeah.
Great. That's Julian. Mm-hmm. And we have two people asking about anger. They're asking, how do they know if they have suppressed anger that they're not aware of? And how do you work with patients on that?
How to work with patients is a whole different ball game. So basically, that's what I do in my masterclass. I actually teach people how to do that. How to know? Well, usually I ask my clients, so what is your relationship with anger? And usually the answer comes, I don't really get angry at all. And then you know something's up because everybody has anger. So that could be a good
yes.
for you.
Of course, yes. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we have to wrap up.
Yeah. So Shant, you froze.
So thank you so much, Dr. Nadia. Just to let everyone, am I good now?
Yes, you're good.
Okay, great. So we're going to be sharing Dr. Nadia's website and all of the information about today's session. You can watch the session again for 48 hours for free on our portal. Yay! So feel free to watch it again or share it with someone who you think might need it. Or you can buy the whole library and then watch everything later on in your own time. There's a lot of very interesting material. So you would be supporting the conference and you would also be getting a huge library at a discounted price. So that's that. And yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Nadia, for being here. It was really, really great having you. And the next session we have in this channel is called The Embodied Thread by Lizzie Vermont. So hopefully if you're around, it's gonna be an hour. Hopefully you can join that. And thank you so much for being here today.
I wonder if I can have half a minute just to share some extra offers that I have for people listening in.
Please do.
Okay, great. Because people usually ask me how they can move on with this. And so I'm just going to bring them up. And I'm not sure about the first one, but if I get it, make it into the bonus package for the upgrade of the tech conference. So if you buy it, then you will get 100% for free upgrade for the online transformation breath session that I'm giving. So if you like this a lot, upgrade, and then you will get my session for free, hopefully. Not entirely sure about that. I'm holding a masterclass for anyone who is a breath practitioner, so I will go much deeper. It's a 2.5-hour class on this topic. There's a 25% off discount code, and there's also a masterclass cancer breath for non-breath practitioners. So if you're interested in this, please join. If you're in the Netherlands or like to fly in, you're welcome to come and work live with me, but I can also do one-on-one online sessions with you, which I very gladly do, 50% off the first tryout. So this is what I have to offer for you. So I really look forward to meeting you again, and thank you so much for listening in. And please spread the word to anybody who needs this. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much for being here and for all the attendees. You can screenshot this page so that you can have all the information for later. And we've also put the links in the chat. Thank you so very much and have a wonderful day.
And a great big thank everyone. You to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.